6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Covered Network, CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Light Force, joined virtually by Anna Forsyth at A4Scythe03. It is just the two of us. Mattly at Mattly_61 is a healthy scratch today, and all we can tell you is he is unfit to podcast, continuing to remain on LTIR and not even inside of the bubble. Is, in the words of the great Anna Forsyth, who wrote this rundown herself, he is our very own version of Sven Barchi, Mr. Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC. Almost reading it verbatim. Like, that's how good it was.
That's all I can assume, is that he jacks so hard to hockey coming back that he's just not even podcasting.
So, like, does this mean, though, like, if we imply that he's our very own Sven Barchi, that he's going to go and find his way to another team next season? Like, you're going to tune into, like, I don't know, Canucks Conversation, and Adam O.C. is going to be on there with quads in favor? Like,
well, like with Sven Barchi, wish him all the best with that, but I'll believe it when I see it.
But it is just the two of us podcasting from the end of, or start of, I don't know, I guess I'd look at it, the heat wave in the West Coast here. It's not one that we're accustomed to. And let's be honest, very rarely are we podcasting this time of year at all. And on what is currently a holiday here out in BC, it is BC Day. So it's a special edition of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. But considering hockey just returned and the fact that the Vancouver Canucks had a game, we thought it was important to get together and talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit too long if we leave it another week, hey?
Well, spoiler alert, if you somehow miss the game, you know, put on those earmuffs. If we don't record this week, there's a possibility that by the time we record next week, the Canucks are no longer playing. And I'm not trying to be down on the team after one game, but the play-in is going to happen fast and hard, and it is conceivable that this is now a possibility. So we're going to talk a little bit about that rough start that the Vancouver Canucks had against the Minnesota Wild, share a few of our thoughts and opinions. The phenomenal analysis, and I say phenomenal loosely because, hey, let's be real, it's Anna and I, and we're going to go completely off the rails. At some point, we're going to talk about, like, Youngblood, the movie. Who knows? But we'll talk about the Vancouver Canucks matchup against the Wild. We'll talk about what we see happening going into Game 2, which could be happening momentarily if you're listening to this podcast when it goes live. But we'll also find other things to talk about. Like, there's other, obviously, hockey happening. It's not just Vancouver, Minnesota playing for the Stanley Cup quite yet. There's a lot going on in the world with regards to social justice. But one thing I actually wanted to sort of touch on before we get into the full episode is the launch of a new podcast that is really heating up the airways. I can't imagine those of you who currently listen to C4 have not heard about The Broadscast, but I wanted to actually to give them some props for their first episode. If you haven't heard it yet, launched last week. So they had a teaser episode, but then they had the full episode on the Friday.
Right.
And I was thoroughly entertained. I didn't know going into it sort of what to expect. I didn't know how they would approach. I thought they were going to have fun, and that was proven to be true. But, you know, there are some times when things get overhyped, and I'm not trying to take away from the hype that The Broadscast had going into this episode, but for some people, there was probably a significant high bar when it came to expectations, and I feel that they met that bar.
Right, yeah, like, I mean, I felt that way on several movies and TV shows where you just hear about it too much beforehand, and then you go in, and even if it's perfectly good, yeah, it doesn't quite meet that. I actually haven't got to it yet. Like, I will show you now, it's next up.
I can see it on the phone.
So yeah, just with cricket coming back, I'm a little bit behind, but I have heard the preview, which I loved. I met a few of these girls in person actually at the International Women's Day Canucks meetup. They're already my favorite people. They're my favorite people to talk to on Twitter, besides obviously the sequel crew.
Well, I was going to ask, like, where has that bumped me down now? I mean, I'd understand if it did, but.
No, you're still good for now, now.
Okay.
But good. Like, I just love the fact that it's doing something extra, something different, and just getting female voices heard. And as a female voice on a podcast, I know that we are kind of few and far between, and I know what it's like being as well on social media as a woman in sports, and just to shine a light on that, but also do it in a fun way, I really enjoy. I've been a fan of the Too Many Men podcast, but honestly, like, as much as I love that show, and I really do, I've been a bit eccentric. Obviously, it is. It's three writers in the East. So to have writers in the local, women in the local market do it, that's just an added bonus for me.
Well, I was actually thinking about this. You know, looking at sort of the Canucks podcast scene, I think one of the first podcasts that I can even remember that had a female host, like a consistent female host, would have been with Gita with Pucks on Net. And I could very well be discounting or not remembering all the great Canucks podcasts out there, because let's also be equally honest, in the entire time that C4 has been available, there have been many podcasts that have come and gone.
Yeah.
Then sort of fast forwarding to some more recent times, I mean, you joining us here on C4, like, you would come in as a guest a number of times, and you know, I've said this to you in the past, but every time you join as a guest, we go, we got to get Anna on, like, regularly. Let's get her in the seat. I mean, at that point we had 20 hosts, right? Clay was still around and that, but I always felt that, one, it was important to have a diverse sort of number of voices. I felt that that made a good podcast. It really wasn't about the crack analysis or the, you know, encyclopedic knowledge.
Not, I mean, what we're aiming for. We're regular people in a pub.
Exactly. I mean, I remember someone asked me, like, what's your podcast supposed to be? I'm like, it's like, yeah, regular people who are sitting at the bar talking hockey while watching the game. Like, that conversation is what this podcast is meant to be. And so, you know, you coming on board, you know, brought a much different voice than one that we didn't have, but also you're extremely intelligent. And that's not me trying to pump your tires. I mean, you follow the sport better than I ever have. So I always viewed myself as the person who sort of brought the pieces together and got, you know, elevated by the people I have around me. You know, it's the smart way to go about it. I'm lazy and help someone pick you up. You guys carry me all the time. I know that.
But I think what we bring is that, yeah, we're all quite different. You've been around since the year dot, right? And especially around Canucks social media. Yeah, Matt coming from originally within the sports, like, writing and reporting side of things. And then there's Adam.
Yeah.
I don't even know who he is anymore, but.
Who Matt met up in SFU or something like that and follow along.
But yeah, it's a very different thing again. But
yeah.
But the. With my weird Britishisms, you know.
Yes. The thing I sort of wanted to point out is there was always just sort of the one voice. Like, there was never that sort of that dominant presence. And that's not to suggest that that was necessary, but for whatever reason or another, I don't know of a podcast that had a true, you know, female centricity about it.
Yeah.
I'm not taking anything away from yourself or Heidi on Hockey podcast or Samantha who's on the broadcast with Area 51.
Yeah.
These voices are strong and necessary, but I think the broadcast as a podcast is going to do some phenomenal things. And I'm going to go back just a few weeks ago when, and I can't remember if it was Samantha or whomever, Vanessa, maybe someone had sort of said, oh, we need a sort of an all-female podcast. And I immediately said, hey, Annie, you should, you know, I'm not trying to encourage you to leave, but I think you'd be a piece of that puzzle. And again, that's not trying to suggest that I want you to go. I don't. I would prefer that you won't do everything. Stay with us. But I think that was necessary. It was needed in the market. It'll be a good thing. And I applaud them after the first steps. I'm looking for more and more. And as I DM them, so hopefully I don't get to, you know, burn in their DMs. Yeah, but on their DM segment. Though if I am, I totally get it. The advice I provided was have fun. And I think it's quite clear that they are.
Yeah.
Once you stop having fun, especially when it comes to podcasting, it becomes difficult to actually click the record button. it's not fun for the listeners. It's unfortunate, but the lack of fun is what kills most podcasts and keeps them going.
Yeah, I think because, as you said, we have so many podcasts in this market. You've just got to offer something different. Like, none of us are NHL insiders with several R's. So it's just about, just making your own voice. And they're definitely doing that. So, well,
yeah. And I, you know, on that note, and this is something I have shared on social media. Yes, there are a million Canucks podcasts out there. And for some, that's, you know, 999,999 too many. But I still feel there is opportunity for people if they're interested in starting their own Canucks podcast. It's just go into it with your eyes open. Understand that you do need to provide a voice that might be different than others. That doesn't mean it has to be completely different. But what's important is that it's your own. Don't try to pretend to be someone else. Like C4, we've never tried to pretend to be Pucks on Net or the Legion of Blogcast, which is now Trust the Process, whatever sort of Wyatt and Jordan title their podcast of the day. And like, and they've been around just as long as C4 has. Like, again, we are who we are. We don't make no bones about it. So if you're going to get into this and, you know, you use C4 as a means, like, oh, I think I can, that's phenomenal. Like Chris Faber sort of talked about in the last episode, how we got him through some tough, you know, some tough nights, days and nights at the mill. And I know we weren't one of the only podcasts that he listened to, but he has actually talked about how, you know, listening to C4 and others sort of spurred me to go and do it. Now look at him. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, disarming, you know, professional hockey players.
He made Quinn Hughes smile. So
yeah, I mean,
what an achievement.
You know, next thing you know, you'll tell me he can make Louis Erickson smile too. And we'll be like, man, this guy's hockey whisperer. But, you know, enough of that. Let's take a quick break here and dive into Rewind. So I'm going to put Faber on blast, as I have on Twitter already multiple times. This is a guy who predicted that the Vancouver Canucks were going to sweep the Minnesota Wild. Now, he broke down the reasons as to why he felt the Vancouver Canucks would dominate the Minnesota Wild and in turn sweep them. And I will be the first to point out that the Vancouver Canucks did nothing as to what he suggested they needed to do to get the win. As a result, the Vancouver Canucks lost. Now, I know there are many people out there in the Smelosphere, some of you who might be listeners of our podcast, who would say, oh, it's those darn referees, you know, not calling the penalties that need to be called. Pedersen got beat around at one point. Bieksa, who was doing, you know, the international sort of roundtable, dropped the Berkey quote that Pedersen is not Swedish for punch me, slash me, kick me, push me, whatever. But looking at that game, yeah, well, the Vancouver Canucks may have needed a special teams advantage. That can't be what they're going to rely on to win play-in hockey, which may or may not be playoff hockey, depending on which version of the NHL release you believe.
Yeah. I mean, if we're talking about playoffs reffing standards, yeah, the number of times that the players, the pundits, like everyone on TV said that this was playoffs hockey, and every single time I'm going, it's not playoffs. We didn't make it yet. But you're absolutely right that you can't even hold it together 5-on-5. The penalty killing, which has been a strength in the past, sucked. So we can't be relying on that power play.
Well, the thing about sort of relying on the power play, you look at the play-in series so far. So all teams have had a game. There's a few more going on today for sort of their second game. The thought was that the penalty kill would have the advantage. Teams have had a lot of time to rest, recover, as well as prepare, plan. But it's been the reverse. Power play seems to dominate. Special teams is producing points. So you could argue that in the case of the Minnesota Wild, Vancouver Canucks, the Minnesota Wild got opportunities they produced. The Vancouver Canucks got, well, 1.5 opportunities. And I'm going to say half because it truly wasn't and didn't. And then you might say, oh, well, the referees just aren't giving the Vancouver Canucks calls. I don't know any call outside of maybe the Stalock trip that was soft against the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, you see up on replay, yeah, that's a penalty. I mean, even in early round, early stage playoffs, that would be a penalty. And yet I didn't see anything that the Wild did that deservedly was, you know, clearly a penalty. Like, not to suggest that if it was called, it's sort of, it's that 50-50.
Right. I think it's definitely true that PD got pushed around a bit, but that's as much on the refs as the Canucks in leaving PD to get pushed around. Yeah. And Canucks were ill-disciplined in the worst way. They weren't, you know, getting penalties because they were standing up for their teammate or, like, trying to get the physical edge on the other team. It was just...
Well, like Rooster at one point, you know, is standing over top of a Wild player who he has already gone and, you know, ragdolled to the ice after the whistle, and then proceeds to taunt. Like, I, at that point, after that play, there was no penalties called. But in my mind, I'm like, oh, the referee's going to go and take Rooster and send him to the sin bin. You got Ferland, who, yes, his stick was being held, but his response is to spear a player on the bench. You can't do that stuff. And the reason that the Wild were starting to go and, you know, commit, you know, such egregious tactics is they could clearly see that they were in the minds of these Canucks players. I was actually sort of thinking this sort of harkens back to the Vancouver Canucks playoff series against the St. Louis Blues, which was the predecessor to the last time the Canucks placed the Minnesota Wild in the playoffs. During that series, the Vancouver Canucks got in the minds of the St. Louis Blues bench. In fact, for those that recall, there was a caught on hot mic moment where Kessler and the exit, I think Burroughs, were asking how Kelly was, and I hear she's a real nice gal.
Oh, that's from then. Okay.
Yeah. So the Vancouver Canucks were doing things to really get under the skin of the Blues. The Blues were undisciplined and the Vancouver Canucks took advantage. This is like the role reversed. And you talk about discipline. The Canucks did not look like a disciplined team. Now, let's actually talk sort of about the play on the ice. There were two special teams goals from the Wild. They scored on two power play relatively quick, but neither one of those goals truly looked good.
No.
Like Markey, yeah, okay, it's a big blast, but Markey needs to stop that first shot that squeaks through him. And I'll give him credit. He did make some huge saves after the fact, but then the second goal where Edler, and again, I still don't understand how you have Edler above Demko in the goaltending depth chart. Edler goes to play low, but doesn't, leaves his legs up. Markey sees that Edler's going down and presumes Edler's got the ice, so I'll play high. And it was the most comedic goal where both players, Edler and Markstrom, are actually holding their legs up off the ice, allowing it to go slowly.
Yeah, shepherding the puck through their legs there.
Oh.
I mean, it was frustrating, and it's especially frustrating as we've seen Markstrom just have those goals just and make those saves time and time again throughout the season. I will say that, you know, there were, it's not like there were good goals, but they were both when Canucks were on the back foot from giving up dumb penalties. So it's hard to completely blame Markstrom.
No.
Getting behind when, in the first place, you know, giving up a too many men penalty on a delay penalty. How do you do that?
Well, not only that, the referee's arm has been up for about, an hour. That's how long that the Canucks currently have control of the puck in their zone. No one is letting Markstrom know that he can get off the ice. How in a quiet barn Markstrom isn't getting this type of communication behooves me. The Wild themselves, they've actually already almost accepted that the Vancouver Canucks are going to try to get the goaltender off to get the extra attacker on. So they've gone and played, you know, not the trap. They're going to plug up the neutral zone. And at some point, Markstrom finally hears, oh, hey, he needs to get off the ice. The problem is the player that's going to go and replace him has already jumped over the boards and is standing by the door, like waiting. Markstrom gets to the bench and suddenly the Vancouver Canucks decide to send another player onto the ice. They actually had, I think it was eight players, including Markstrom, still skate on ice. So they don't even get the power play there. Like, again, that's the type of stuff you can't make mistakes in a playoff style frame of hockey. And you might go and discount that. Well, Chris, like, hey, look how long it's been. You know, you're a little out of sync. Okay, sure. I completely get it. But we didn't see that type of problem from the Wild. And having watched a number of the games in this play-in series, yes, some teams are making mistakes, but you can clearly tell the ones that are getting punished for them.
Yeah, completely. And I think the frustrating thing was the people like Markstrom, who were so used to not making these mistakes, were that top six who were used to dominating games. And none more so than JT Miller, like, was just a step off. Like, JT Miller's passing was rough.
His passing was rough, but I would give credit to Miller, actually. Like, he had a couple of solid opportunities. But yeah, his passing was there. Toffoli, I think, was dressed to play.
Yeah, like, he seemed to be, you know, back in LA already.
Now, Petey was on the ice, and in fairness to him, the Minnesota Wild clearly identified when Pettersson was on the ice to ensure that they got the matchup they wanted, and the instructions were to a player is, if Petey's in the ice, ensure that you hand-deliver him an invitation to a get-together that we're going to have. And if he has yet to RSVP, make sure you give him a reminder. Like, he was being mugged and had essentially a buddy or a shadow throughout the game.
But that's the most... that's clearly what the Wild were going to do.
Yeah, like, but the fact
that... will have known that from the moment they got that matchup.
Oh, it's coaching 101. Zone out Petey. The Vancouver Canucks, though, are constructed to be a team that if you take advantage of Petey, we're going to take him, you're going to try to take him out of the play. We still have players on the ice that can punish you. And, yeah, you're going to go and, you know, put two people on Petey. Now you've given us almost a power play. Again, the Vancouver Canucks on this team are constructed to, in theory, accommodate that, but the players that are on the ice to do so didn't. Besser seemed to, I mean, he was trying, but he seemed to want to be doing it all on his own.
Yeah, like, he's trying really hard to score.
Yeah, and I was going to say Kessler-esque, and I know that that name might ruffle a few feathers right now, but Kessler back in his glory days with Vancouver Canucks-esque. The difference is that Kessler doing that, bull in a china shop. Besser doing it, maybe not same level of killer instinct. Mm. Like, there, you know, it's just, again, maybe it's just a bunch of guys that are all amped up, wanting to play, a little too excited. Then got a little too off their game plan with that sort of early goal. Weren't necessarily getting the calls that they had thought they'd get. And then obviously the Minnesota Wild, they play a very structured game. Like, you know,
contained, didn't I say?
Yeah, dead puck wild is the talk about it. But that, I think, yes, it is a structured style and it was somewhat dead puck, but the Wild were hustling. Like,
yeah,
they weren't playing slow.
Every turnover they got, you know, they made it count on the counter, which Canucks were not doing at all.
Well, in the second period, the Vancouver Canucks came out real well to kick off that period. Sure. Like, they truly came out. And then suddenly the Wild get a power play, and yeah, there's a goal. Like, it seemed that every time the Vancouver Canucks found a way to establish some momentum, they did something that empowered the Wild to punish them for a mistake. And that's where I think if the Vancouver Canucks are to have success in the series, and we'll get into it when we get into half full, half empty, is they need to mitigate the number of mistakes that they're making, because the Wild are clearly a team that is looking to capitalize on it. It is maybe not Jacques Lemaire Wild, where it's truly a cult, where everyone bought into the system. But this is a team that is not built with the flash and the dash. They're built to capitalize on what little you provide.
Yeah, I think so, because they have seen from the outset that they are mismatched skill-wise on the top end, that their goaltending, you know, there's a difference there, but, you know, they've jumped on every mistake, they've played discipline in their own end, played within themselves and then capitalized on those opportunities. But yeah, the goaltending is something else. Like,
well, Vancouver Canucks have a history of making opposing goaltenders look like they're in the running for the Vezina. And Stalock didn't have a lot of pressure, but he did make a few good saves. Like, there, I think it was JT Miller's shot that he did the around the world on. There was another big save. Like, I mean, but that thing is, Markstrom made more big saves.
He did. But Stalock just has that way of looking busy. And making every save big, because he just comes charging out the net a lot of the time. It's a crazy style, but it was working. But you
speaking
just think
about charging out of the net, Markstrom charging almost to the blue line, not once,
no,
but twice.
He was inspired by Stalock, I think.
Well, the first time turned out okay. The second time turned out fine, but the first time was, that was very risky. But
yeah, know. No, I completely had my heart in my mouth for those moments. But you got to think that the Canucks can exploit that haphazard goaltending style.
Yeah, true. Hughes, he looked okay in his first professional playoff-ish game.
Yeah, he looked decent. He kept fighting. He kept trying to find ways through. But just getting to the middle of the ice was just seemed very difficult for the Canucks.
Well, and you can tell, like, the Canucks were struggling to break the sort of dead puck defense in the neutral zone. There was a lot of dump and chase, and then Stalock would be there and intervene. They couldn't get that puck to die in the corner. The other part that sort of behooved me is sort of the coaching matchup, maybe not so much coaching matchup, the line matchup. Vancouver Canucks are needing energy. I completely get that. But late in the game, after a stoppage in play, you're trotting out your third line.
Yeah. And it was a third line that was really struggling on the night too. It often seemed to be that especially later in the game, that a lot of the better opportunities fell to the third and fourth line, and you just wish someone else was out there to finish those moves.
Well, and in fairness, when there were a number of times where the third line was out there and Petey was double shifting, like that, Petey was getting opportunities, and I think that was Travis Green's attempt to try to give him space, hoping that he could somehow beat the matchup to get Pettersson sort of engaged. But there was a moment, like late in the third period, where it wasn't a Petey on the ice with the third line. It was the third line. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think who actually was on the ice after someone pulled the light switch in the third period there.
When the Janitors tried to end the game for the Canucks, they felt bad for us.
Although someone pointed out it was exactly 11 p.m. Mountain Time, so could it have been that the barn was on a timer and the lights turned off automatically?
Yeah, it's just that curfew, maybe.
But no, it was just, you know, again, the type of coach that Green is to reward players who play, play hard, the blue-collar style, put in the effort. Third line kind of was, but they were also equally worrisome on discipline, like, I'm not entirely sure this is the game, type of game that you go in and you reward. It's not a regular season game.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It is what it is. I think we've briefly talked about this today in Discord. In that, on the one hand, you don't want to panic, but on the other hand, we've got three games. You know, possibly we could be out by this time this next week if you don't change something. I guess we're going to get into that.
Have a lot of money. One final thing. Francesco was in the building.
Yeah.
Live tweeting. He had like, what, 6 or 7 tweets throughout the game. One of which he magically took a picture of himself with his arms crossed. It's like he staged the camera on like a gorilla, stand or something. I'm sure that's what he did. Francesco clearly tweets all his tweets. It is definitely him. But, it had me wondering, like, I get he's an owner. He could probably go wherever he wants, but he talked about driving to Edmonton.
Yeah.
That part kind of found funny. One, that he drove. Two, that if that's the case, that he's getting to go into the stadium and within sort of this enclosed bubble-ish space. Again, he's an owner. He can go where he wants, but I would imagine that they didn't, put the same rules and rigor in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily understand all of the rules as it breaks down, but maybe that was a condition of him entering the bubble or the outer bubble.
Yeah.
Is that he couldn't fly? I don't know.
That could be actually on the bubble part, like not flying. Like, would he fly commercial, like even if it was in business class? Yeah, good point. Anyway, that's enough and rewind. We're going to take ourselves a short break before diving in half full, half empty. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on Full Press Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time, and yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Going into game two against the Minnesota Wild, if there is one thing that you change about this Vancouver Canucks team or effort, what would it be?
The Canucks part?
Yeah.
No, that's what the change would be.
Ah.
It's hard to think of just one thing, really, because... But I'm going to pick one thing. Okay. I will get off the fence, pull the splinters out of my special places, and say, reunite the lotto line. Why not? It'll make Brock happy. It might create some chemistry that was severely lacking last night. Put a booster rocket up Tyler Toffoli's special place.
Because everyone's special place is getting involved here. You know, I'm surprised the lotto line didn't make an appearance. Or I don't know if it actually did at all last night. And again, we're recording on Monday. A podcast comes live on Tuesday. Hockey happened on Sunday. But I am genuinely surprised that it didn't have a stronger presence late in the game. Like, you know, we think back to, like, even Willie brought together sort of the top line and made that happen. Obviously it included two players already in the Sedins, but you know, the idea behind it was that you would play who was hot to try to generate a chance. Whereas Travis seems to be much more rigid in his approach. Yeah. He throws lines into the blender, but he doesn't necessarily reunite the magic of the past. So for me, I was actually going to say the one thing that I want from the Vancouver Canucks is discipline, which is again, weird because they aren't necessarily an undisciplined team, but they need to settle things down. I mean, you might argue, well, Chris, the one thing they need is to score, and that's true too, but their lack of discipline is going to punish them. If not against the Wild, if they magically were to go win game two and then continue on and win the for 3 out of 5, phenomenal, but playoff hockey is where undisciplined teams get exited real quick. The lack of discipline, even with the Boston Bruins in 2011, and I know that can be a sore subject, the Bruins were still disciplined. Like, they instigated a lot of the problems that, you know, ultimately befell the teams that they ran into. But they didn't go and put themselves in a position that made it easy for the opposition to then take advantage. So I think the Vancouver Canucks need to play a much more disciplined style. Like, again, it's focusing on the mental side, focusing on the fact that you're playing against a Minnesota Wild team who is slower than you, who is simply looking to capitalize on the mistakes. Making fewer mistakes provides the Wild fewer opportunities to capitalize. And again, I think Markstrom can provide a solid effort. But you're right. Maybe it does require more than one thing. Maybe it is a line combination. Or the conversation in Gate 16 today was the possibility that Jake Virtanen find his way in. Like, I sort of floated the idea after watching the game where Ferland goes and spears, I can't remember who it was, on the Wild bench, and thinking, oh, that might be how Jake gets into the game because Ferland won't be able to play. Well, word has come down that Ferland has simply been issued a $5,000 fine. So again, does that mean Jake still finds a way in? Might it be a Louis Erickson that shows up to settle things down on the penalty kill and get the empty net goal that hopefully the Vancouver Canucks get the opportunity to score?
Yeah, I mean, it seems bizarre that you would, in not quite desperate, but in times of need, turn to Louis Erickson. That would just be the most Vancouver thing ever, especially if it worked.
So this is the thing, though, is that let's look at the top two lines are the top two lines. The pieces as to where they should fall, up for debate. Third line is your energy line or your agitative line or whatever it might be. And the fourth line is the one that you can trust to go out there. They might not be high event hockey, but the point is they go out there and they're your safety valve. They're going to settle things down. You trust them on the ice. You need, and again, that's again part of your penalty kill come out of that fourth line. For all the faults that Louis Erickson receives. I don't think anyone ever accuses him of being a high-risk hockey player. The problem is he's paid to be a high-risk hockey player.
Yeah, I mean, Louis is the epitome of low-event hockey, but Canucks could have used a little bit of low-event on that fourth line, at least.
Right, and I think that's where there is maybe an opportunity for him to come in. Like, there was talk about, oh, Sutter out, Louis in. Like, again, there's different ways to make it work. But then, like, I'll use JV18. Who comes out for him to go in? Like, I had only floated the Ferland idea. Yeah. Thinking Ferland was suspended. I wasn't saying you pull Ferland out because he tried to use his hockey stick as a shish kebab, but...
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, yeah, we're talking less than 24 hours after Michael Ferland's first competitive NHL game.
Where he, within 2 minutes, was it first shift, maybe second, decides to drop the gloves and toss in the bombs.
Yeah. Which, I mean, from my point of view, I didn't like to see that. But also, who's telling Michael Ferland not to play like that? That's his style. That's what he's going to do. So, yeah, if he pulls up, fine. If there are no ill effects, if he seems to be completely with it, I don't think you can pull him out. I don't think that's the right move. So from my point of view, I don't think Jake gets back in. I don't think that's what Travis will want. And I
think Jake only gets in with injury at this point. Injury and, is suspension.
Yeah, but I don't think I particularly see that as the right move, right go-to strategy. For all intents and purposes, the lineup that the Canucks iced yesterday should have been good enough. It really should have been. Yeah. But it wasn't.
So game two is a show me. The problem is, in a best of five, you better be shown in game two. Like, you know, there was some awfulizing taking place on Canucks social media, obviously, after the game. And that should not be a surprise to anyone. Heck, it could have been like the season opener. People like, oh my God, it's Tank. They lost a game. The problem, however, and this actually, sort of awfulization took place in our Discord, which if you're not part of, go to discord.io/C4Discord and you'll be able to get in. The thing about it is that in a best of five series, the team that wins the first game has a significant advantage over the team that loses. It's just the odds are stacked. It's not best of seven where you lose one, you're like, you know, we could actually lose two and we still have a shot. In a best of five, losing two means a reverse sweep. And that provides zero error from our margin for error. So the Vancouver Canucks do need to win game two. If the Canucks roll the same lineup back, you believe that lineup is capable of doing it against this Minnesota Wild team that we saw with Stalock in the net? Because they're not leaving Stalock, or not coming from Stalock. He played significantly well.
I do think so. Okay. My concern will be they start off too much on the front foot and, you know, they're going too hard and then they make mistakes again.
Well, the Vancouver Canucks, and you know, we talked about this over the course of the season, and this sort of, you know, the referral that Matt will often say, oh, this is Chris Golden hockey. It's the high event hockey that I love. You know, I'm an old man who remembers 80s style hockey where defense was optional. And all you did is you relied on your goaltender to get you that one save so that you could win like 7-5 or something like that. The Vancouver Canucks over the course of the season, especially when they were hot earlier on, it wasn't because they were blowing teams out like 7-2. No, they were winning games like 7-5. I feel the Vancouver Canucks do need to come out sort of pedal to the metal. And if the Wild, let's say, do get a goal, that doesn't mean the Vancouver Canucks change style. That just simply means, okay, they need to get in to position on the ice and take advantage of that. You know, during social media, people are like, can Francesco start shouting shoot?
Yeah.
Because the Vancouver Canucks were looking like very Sedin-like. Looking for that perfect pass to get that perfect opportunity. Get into a high-impact part of the ice and shoot the puck. Yeah, okay, if Stalock goes and stands on his head, fine. But you don't score unless you get them shots.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. It's funny that I saw Eddie Lack tweeted during the game that that was one of the few benefits of not having a crowd is that no one was yelling shoot. But I think a lot of people came back and said they kind of need to be.
And, you know, it's we're not professional hockey players here. And to almost a player, you often hear this like, oh, fans yelling shoot as an uneducated fan. I look at it as a matter of fans yelling shoot are not telling you that they know where the opportunity exists. They're trying to identify to you that they feel you're not playing sort of that high event style that they're expecting. You know, fans want to be entertained. You know, I don't know a game where, and this is even Canucks fans, Canucks Twitter can be crazy at times. If the Vancouver Canucks go up against a team whose goaltender is hot, where they pepper that goaltender, they fire pucks from every which way, and that goaltender does, you know, miraculous things to get their team the win, I very rarely see Canucks fans simply, oh man, the Canucks, they needed to pass more. They needed to find better opportunity. Because to them and to us as fans, we're seeing this high event. We're seeing the chances. Now, is that extra pass going to get that goal? Okay, fine, maybe. But when you're playing against a team like the Minnesota Wild, there's less likelihood you're going to get that extra pass through. The Wild are built to prevent it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Wild are just going to collapse in and just block those shots through the middle. And it's you're not going to find that perfect angle. Really not. That's not the way they play. They play to prevent that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just feels so stupid to be, like, you know, talking like an NHL player during an intermission interview, but pucks on net, like, it's real.
Hey, I hear there's another podcast aptly titled that. They might go and steal that now. You'll be forever immortalized in their intro.
Oh, gosh.
I know, you're so excited. No, pucks on net is important, and the Vancouver Canucks, while they did in the second period and sort of later in the third start throwing the puck at Stalock in the first game, they had sort of squandered that opportunity in the first period. And that might have been sort of the, you know, the tight legs, the first time they've been on the ice in months. Okay, you know what? That's fine. It's just in the second game, we can't see that first period warm up. They need to come out ready and raring to go. Now, the other component, and I'm going to start asking you this, when it comes to line matchups, I think it's safe to say we want to see lines 1 and 2 more than we see 3 and 4. Do you think that that'll actually hold true?
I mean, obviously it's situational based.
Well, special teams aside, like, I mean,
yeah,
I get like on a penalty kill or a power play, things out the window, but 5-on-5 hockey,
right?
I felt we saw far more of the third line and technically the fourth line too than I would have preferred.
Yeah. But yeah, I just wanted to emphasize that part of that discipline is so we see less of those,
yes,
special teams, PK matchup, and, you know, maybe that is part of it. Miller's just exhausted by it all, who knows, but, I agree. And I, obviously you want your fourth line to almost be invisible. You don't want them to be making like these big errors that we were seeing them making. We just don't want to be talking about our fourth line. Mm-hmm. We want them to get out there for the time they are and they do their job and they get off late. So I think it is part of it that we really weren't seeing what we wanted to see from the top two lines, but sure. I agree that we want to be ideally on that front foot and using those fast two lines, which is where the Canucks have the skill gap. And mm-hmm. using it to their advantage.
True. So before we take another quick break here, before we dive into our last segment of the effort, predictions. Faber, who is formerly a friend of the show, he predicted obviously a sweep. That's not happening. Now, if I was on the show, I would have said the Canucks in 4. I might have actually even suggested the Canucks might lose the first game. Now I'm sort of thinking Canucks in 5, and you might say, well, Chris, what's the difference that they lost the first game? He said 4. How they lost the first game sort of gives me pause. But I do think the Vancouver Canucks have it in them to win game 2. I could see them winning game 3. I kind of wonder if maybe the Wild don't come back in 4, and I feel the Canucks over a 5-game series win out.
I agree with you. So I did go back and listen to both mine and Matt's predictions that we did a few episodes back, because I was putting them down for my playoff pool and I didn't want to think about it again. So I just thought, I'll just play what I thought earlier. And I did say Canucks in five. So I stand by that. I don't think any of us thought Minnesota would be, apart from Chris Faber, thought that Canucks would walk this.
There were actually a number of media that said Canucks in three. Like there were surprisingly more than I would have expected. The safe pick was Canucks in four. And then where you start to get into a very conservative pick was Canucks in five. And once it gets to five, it's almost anyone's series.
Sure. But I think most people think that Canucks have the edge, even though a lot of Minnesota media, I think, think that Canucks have the edge. But Minnesota have done their best to negate that edge that Canucks have.
I can't remember. I actually don't know if it was a Wild player or if it was Wild media, but I saw a quote where the perspective was that the Vancouver Canucks didn't respect the Wild. Like they weren't taking the Wild seriously enough and have now been punished for it. And they actually sort of inferred back in the, I can't remember what year it was, the Canucks Wild series, where that was essentially it. The Wild themselves felt then the Canucks weren't taking this seriously. And you had like Bertuzzi, who was allegedly saying things to Minnesota Wild fans about not buying tickets for game six and the like. So, you know, I get that bulletin board media is the you know, way that NHL teams operate. It could be that it was manufactured. I'm not going to suggest the Vancouver Canucks underestimated the Minnesota Wild. I actually think it's just more of the one. The team's too young to actually underestimate. I think the team, just unfortunately, its youth didn't really explain what playoff hockey is. And while this isn't the playoffs, it is playoff hockey.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to disagree. I think there were that too many people are talking about it like it's already the playoffs.
Well, okay, it's not okay.
I just think we just need to be like, we're not there yet. We need to knuckle down.
No, but like when I talk about playoff hockey, it is like the officiating is going to be more like the playoff style than a regular season style of officiating we might see, right? When it comes to sort of the effort that you need to provide, like let's say the Canucks lose, heaven forbid they lose game two. Game three is playoffs, right? That's like it's end of season, must win to get in, cannot lose. It's the magic number business. That's playoff hockey. Not all teams get to experience it. In fact, some of the teams that play right through to the last game of the season and win to get in have some of the better performances in the playoffs. Yeah. Like I'm trying to think. There was a game I went to years ago that the Vancouver Canucks beat the LA Kings late in the season to win. I had never been in a Vancouver Canucks building with that much energy. And I want to say it was this year that they went up against the Detroit Red Wings and entered that series up 2-0 before the beach ball. And obviously things didn't go too well after that. Why was it that the Vancouver Canucks played so well? It's because they almost started playing playoff hockey early and didn't stop. Whereas it took, and again, I want to say it was the Red Wings, took a little bit to warm up. But again, you're right. I mean, it isn't the playoffs yet, but I think the playoff style of hockey is one that they have to start to sort of embrace.
Okay.
Agree to disagree. We'll take ourselves a short break here. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on the Full Press Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
He liked to say the F word.
Well, then get the F here then. Okay, see ya.
Is going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
As far as segments go, the F word, this isn't meant based on the play of the F word, and actually some etymology here. The F word was simply capitalizing on the whole Adam Ovenall Carter, the F stands for Francis, middle initial part.
Yeah.
And then Adam being angry and him, you know, being angry about something. We've just kept the name of the segment. It's sort of our third or second segment as we pop it into our podcast episode. But it is a segment where we want to talk about the big issues of the game or the big topics of the game. And the big issue right now is the movement behind, you know, social justice. And this is something we've addressed in previous episodes. We're now having an opportunity to talk about how the NHL is approaching social justice. And I think it's important to understand that this topic is one that needs to be addressed. I'm seeing far too many people who were to say, just, I don't watch hockey and politics shouldn't be in hockey. Politics is completely in sport. It's not to suggest that there are political parties behind teams or whatnot, but the politics of sport exists. And we see players and we idolize these players. And I feel they have an important opportunity to invest in their medium to elevate issues of concern. Am I wrong here?
No, I completely agree with you. I think the two things to say to people that say, you know, I don't watch sport for politics is, A, you know, some of the issues we're talking about should not be up for political debate. The fact that Black lives matter, the fact that Black people are disproportionately killed by police and in police custody, that's just a fact. And the fact that the NHL is a predominantly white league, that's a fact also. But yeah, it's completely true that politics comes into sport all the time, you know, especially in North America. You know, there's veterans nights, there's first responders nights. The fact that they have anthems at all, that's political.
You know, and I just on that note, this topic came up in Gate 16 in Discord. I think it was friend of the show Nexus had sort of suggested, like, you know, why don't we drop the anthems? It's very North American.
Yeah.
I always thought anthems as part of sport were a thing until as I got older and I started sort of seeing more, and I don't want to say international play, but more international events outside of North America. And it's like, oh, okay. The only time you really ever see the anthem is when it is an international, like a world event where you're representing a country, and even then it doesn't happen at the start. It happens often at the end. Like if it does happen at the start, it's usually a friendly event and it's often a game in North America.
Yeah, it happens at international games. It did, for example, at the weekend there was the FA Cup final, they did play God Save the Queen. It's part of the tradition of the FA Cup.
Okay.
It's a bit bizarre, but yeah, in general you don't hear anthems. But
yeah, like when Arsenal takes on Liverpool, they're not playing God Save the Queen or King, depending on who's on the throne at the given time. Like that's not the thing.
No, not at all. But as much as they don't have the anthems, what they have taken on board in UK sport, as much as it's happening right now, is kneeling. You know, they kneel before every single game, whether it's cricket, whether it's football. That's just the done thing now. That's the
Norm. And that this topic came up in NHL because there was an image of a number of NHL players sort of interspersed. I can't remember which two teams it was. Players sort of opposing players side by side. U.S. flag up on the screen, and it was shared by the son of the president of the United States, as this is the way sports should be. And then you have a variety of Twitter accounts, you know, trumping it up like, oh, I'm an NHL fan. I'm an NHL fan. And then, you know, Matt Dunba this past weekend, not even in a game that he's playing in, you know, gets on the microphone, you know, shares his feelings. And quite frankly, he is someone that has the authority to speak. It is not you. It is not me. But he goes and shares some very important words. And these same people will be like, oh, you know, I can't believe he kneeled for the U.S. anthem. And that's hockey's dead to me now. Well, kneeling as a sign of protest, not going to lie, I don't understand how that's a problem. Like that's like, you know, and we don't want our podcast to be quote unquote political. We're very opinionated folk, but we live in a democracy that actually provides people the power to protest.
Definitely. And you just think that it's just a shame that you see all the, and it's actually not true anymore that it's the black athletes or athletes of color doing it on their own, because there have been, as we speak, on the game that's just finished between Dallas and Vegas, a couple of white athletes took the knee. So, yeah, they're not completely on their own anymore, but you just wish it was more of a conversation that it wasn't just the athletes of color have to answer. And, you know, Matt Dumba is on the Hockey Diversity Alliance. That is part of now his remit. But yeah, if they're not being consulted on the NHL Skates 4 initiative, which is something that they've come up with and given to each team to pick something that they skate for. And I think, for example, the Oilers have picked Colby Cave, which, you know, great, like, very important to honor his memory, but it just seems a bit of a mess in terms of the approach.
Sure. And I just want to rewind, like, when I said that our voices aren't important, I wasn't trying to suggest that we should not speak up. I was simply trying to elevate a voice that can speak with authority that the two of us lack. So to make that very clear.
Yes, I agree. I agree that, you know, where we should be elevating people that know about the issue far more than us. But I just think more to white athletes than, you know, us average Joes and Josephines here. It's on them to use their privilege to elevate the issue as well.
Yeah. Now, on the topic of kneeling that you had brought up, it took place between the Golden Knights and
the Stars.
Were they playing? Stars, thank you. In the game where a number of players knelt during the anthems. I from a hockey perspective, I was actually wondering how accommodating is kneeling on ice wearing skates? Like the actual execution, I don't know what that's like. I'm not trying to discount the effort. But if someone were to do that, like I look at that as like, okay, I completely understand what you're looking to, you as a hockey player are looking to accomplish, and I have no issue with it. As far as sort of the We Skate 4 initiative, I actually want to sort of tie this to what, you know, Major League Soccer did. And I know you take shots at me for my following of Major League Soccer. But the MLS, on the back of every single player's jersey, provided them an opportunity to identify what it is that they were playing for. Many elected to play for the likes of, you know, Breonna Taylor. But then there were others who were playing for, you know, family members impacted by the pandemic. To use as an example, gosh, now I forgot his name, but the starting goalkeeper for the Whitecaps, I think it was his mother-in-law passed away from COVID-19 just before the start tournament. So for him, that's who he was trying to play for in the memory. Cause the pandemic is still a significant impact to our day-to-day lives. And that's not trying to take away from something like Black Lives Matter. But I feel that there are a number of social issues that do need to be recognized. And if that's what a player individually chooses to recognize, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, yeah, part of my issue with the, you know, standing together for anti-racism and then for the frontline heroes, it not only is messy, but it takes away the focus from both causes, because I would say that the space during the anthems and before the games, that's the space for Black Lives Matter as a movement. And because that's the movement, that's what it, if you're part of the global movement, it's not standing up for anti-racism, it's kneeling during the anthem. And, but I definitely appreciate that. I think celebrating frontline heroes, stuff like that, is really important. I just don't think that's a space for it.
No, but that, so we're Major League Soccer, like, that's prior to kickoff, well, essentially kickoff, every single player, every single official all the referees knelt.
Mm-hmm.
Started each game like that. And it was quite clearly why they were kneeling. That I think that's where they were trying to find that balance.
Yeah. And that seems like they have done that job.
To your point, though, I think with the NHL is trying to, they're trying to be the real life version of, I don't, you probably saw that tweet from Brand. It was like white text on a black space. I don't know if you saw it, but essentially someone inferred that when Black Lives Matter became as compelling as it currently is, a number of brands started to acknowledge it by putting white text on a black background that didn't commit to anything specific.
Right.
Is actually very non-specific. And that occurs to me as to how the NHL seems to be approaching this. It's almost as if we want to go through the motions to say that we can go back and we did something, but we don't want to do something that might potentially, you know, be too out there for fear that it becomes the problem that, oh my goodness, takes away from what it was we were trying to accomplish. It's doing nothing for the sake of not doing anything.
Yeah, definitely. And I think where the NHL have done such a good job, as opposed to the other North American major men's sport leagues, in terms of organization with testing and everything in terms of COVID, they're falling down here. And I think they just have such a great opportunity and a great platform, given how well it's going on that end, to show that they can be a leader on that front.
No, and that's a fair point. NHL has excelled with how they've approached the pandemic. Major League Baseball, which if you're in our Discord, is like the exact opposite as to their approach and how things are going. And who knows how the NFL, when it fires up, I mean, arguably the top professional league in North America, you know, they have much that they could learn from how the NHL is approaching it. But then on the topic of social issues, that's where, yeah, the NHL doesn't, I'm not going to suggest they're falling down. They're almost stuck in neutral.
Yeah, they're not using the opportunity that they have. Yeah.
The one thing I did want to sort of wind this conversation up, and it talks about kneeling under the anthem. So I'm going to be the first one to admit there have been times in the past where I've actually, when the anthems were being played, and I saw someone, like, let's say, the Whitecaps match, sitting down, or they kept their hat on, I would infer, like, I would prefer to see someone stand up. I would prefer to see them take their hat off to recognize the anthem. I get that, you know, the anthem may not have a place here, but as it's being played, so respect the anthem. That's just, that was my take. This is before Colin Kaepernick started kneeling, right? So Colin Kaepernick didn't actually start kneeling during the anthem as a form of protest. He just sat down, didn't stand up.
Yeah.
But all the players would stand up, walk to the sideline. Colin just kept sitting on the bench. A U.S. veteran reached out to him. He was actually an Army Green Beret. His name is Nate Boyer. He was actually a veteran who reached out to Colin Kaepernick to say, hey, you know, you sitting down during the anthem, you know, upsets me. And I'd like to talk to you about it. Colin, to his credit, took Nate up on this opportunity. The two sat down and discussed this, which is, you know, let's think about it. Professional athlete, U.S. Green Beret, probably diametrically two different people that would never cross paths in a million years. They had a reasonable conversation where Colin Kaepernick expressed the reasons why he was sitting down during the anthem. Nate Boyer heard this and said, okay, I recognize what you're looking to accomplish. Here, let me tell you how this impacts me. And the two of them came to realize that there was a better way. And what was that better way? It was during the anthem that Colin goes, stands with his team, and kneels. It was Nate Boyer who, again, speaking from this place where people are like, oh, when you're kneeling during the anthem, you're not respecting of those, you know, those of those before us, our veterans, our forefathers and others who fought hard and stood for the country and the flag. This is a guy who did, who said, yeah, you know, we can figure out a better way. And as a result, if kneeling is ultimately what upsets you, I'm going to assure you, it's not kneeling that's upsetting you. It is not the act of kneeling down there in the anthem that you're truly upset about. There's something else that upsets you.
Yeah.
And it's important to recognize that what that is, you need to figure out, because I will I will bet that for someone who is upset about the kneeling and figures out what that issue is, you might then realize, oh, actually, that's not truly problematic. Like, I don't know. My grandfather was a pilot during World War II. I truly don't know how he would feel or how he would respond. I have a guess that he probably would look at Colin Kaepernick kneeling and be upset. But I would reasonably be able to have a conversation with that grandfather to explain, well, what is it that he's looking to do? Like, he's doing exactly what you fought to allow him to do. Exactly. So why is that the problem? Like, my grandfather, he was a pretty smart guy. He would probably first say, well, yeah, he could totally do this, but here's how I see it. And see, this is now where the conversation's changing. Now we've moved off the act. We're actually getting to the point of what he's interpreting, the message that he's reading into, and not fully understanding what the message that, you know, someone like Colin Kaepernick or Matt Dunba, you know, during the game a few nights ago, or what we saw the Golden Knights and Stars players do tonight. Like, again, that's the act of kneeling is not what you're probably upset with.
I couldn't put it better. I think you're 100% right. We're at the stage now where we know what it means. We know what they're kneeling for, and it's not anything to do with the flags or, you know, not being patriotic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have my own concerns about, you know, the American concept and how they look at patriotism, but this is a separate issue. This is, you know, I'm just going to quickly borrow words from Brooke McGillis, who's now an activist. And a lot of what he says is, you know, I'm not saying these things because I hate hockey. I'm saying them because I love hockey and I want to make it better. And I know that that's what Matt Dunbar and Colin Kaepernick and everyone that's kneeling during the anthem wants, is they want their country to be better because they love it.
Yeah. And that's so well said, because who doesn't want things to be better? Definitely a tough topic. And while I can appreciate there are some of you out there that listen to our podcast who be like, well, I don't tune into you guys to you know, talk about this.
Unfortunately, it's just part of it. Like,
it's life.
Yeah. Almost we wish we didn't have to talk about it, but it's an issue right now. So it's part of the sport. So
You know, and this, you know what, we're not going to tell you this will be the last time we'll discuss it. I mean, if there's one thing about our podcast, one thing about C4, one thing since the start of this podcast, way back when Clay and I fired up the mic in my condo here, we've never looked to shy away from topics of this. Because again, to what you and I said at the start of the episode, C4 is about a bunch of people with, you know, different views talking like any one of us would do about the game, about the life, about the world today while watching a game at the bar. This is what this podcast is about, and it'll continue to be the case. I can assure you these types of conversations happen, and you've probably taken part of them. Our podcast is no different. That's a tough episode.
Yeah.
But I think it's a valuable one, and I think it was important to have this opportunity to talk,
yeah,
you know, as we have. I mean,
yeah.
At the end of the day, it's something that needs to be discussed. And
yeah, I'm glad to share a virtual drink at the bar with you and pull up a stool and talk about it with you. And yeah, as we say, if it comes up again, we'll talk about it again.
Yeah. Speaking of virtual drinks, I was drinking a coffee just before we hit record. What were you drinking?
I actually was as well. I did have a beer in the park, Elia, except I didn't because that's illegal.
Was it a sneaky beer?
Yeah.
Because the
Vancouver parks are not a laugh. But yeah, I'm already on the coffee because I'm getting old now. Just one beer made me tired.
Welcome to my world.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we are sitting here having coffee, talking puck, talking hockey. We've got the Vancouver Canucks playing today. You'll be listening to this podcast hopefully before they play. If not, you'll be listening to the podcast after the play. Hopefully they win. I think I'm predicting the Vancouver Canucks win game two.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But we will be back at the same place, same time a week from now. We'll continue to podcast weekly as long as the Canucks continue to play hockey. Now, What does that mean if, for some reason, heaven forbid, they stop playing hockey? We'll obviously keep in touch. But the easiest way to stay on top of everything that's related to the C4 podcast is to be a part of our Discord. Like, the best conversations take place in Gate 16. Off topic, we keep track of almost everything else. Sometimes it's other hockey teams. Sometimes it's MLB. Sometimes it's video games. Sometimes it's the weather.
Yeah.
We've got like a drinking game that's apparently going to start up soon because of how the, you know, community is. Like, if Anna mentions cricket or Jessica mentions cricket, that's a drink.
Yeah. So, and I already did that today. So,
yeah.
But and then, I'm going to do that.
Bitter Canuck, who's extremely shameless, or Nexus were to disagree on something, that's a drink. Or is it a drink if they agree? Because them agreeing is much more rare than them disagreeing.
No, I think you're supposed to drink when usual things happen.
Okay, so then it's a disagreeing.
A disagreement. And if Adam ever appears on Discord, which does happen.
That's a shotgun. That's like not just a drink.
That's a shotgun for sure. You have to down your drink.
Wherever you happen to be, if you don't have a drink in hand, you have to stop, go get one, shotgun. Like, it's the rule.
Yeah.
I mean, just point out, we're not actually suggesting that it has to be alcoholic. It's implied it's a drink. You read into whatever drink
but
means to you.
If anyone has any more suggestions for things that happen either on the show or in Discord regularly enough that they should be made into the drinking game rules, yeah, just come into Discord and suggest it to us.
Yeah, most definitely. So any final words of wisdom that you want to share with all of our listeners there, Anna?
Well, this time next week, whatever happens, we'll know how Canucks have fared in this play-in series. So I hope we're talking from a get excited from the playoffs, it's all happening perspective. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we'll have to see.
For me, don't be alarmed if I'm not here next week, because I'm not. I mean, it's not like I'm playing like the I'm on, I'm off. Some of it has to do with my work schedule these days, the pandemic, as it has with many people impacted work. My work is still happening. It's just now I support, you know, a global company, which makes time zones fun. But I'm actually on vacation next week. So it'll be yourself, Anna, because you're always here. You're like the most consistent one.
Yeah.
I'm like that weird A4 podcast now.
Weird stain on the wall. I'm not going anywhere. Everyone has a weird stain on the wall.
I was going to say, I would have described you much better than that, but okay. Hopefully Matt will be back. Adam's still on the LTIR, not even inside of a bubble, but who knows? Maybe he makes a surprise and then
maybe he drives 16 hours like Francesco did and he makes late entrance into the bubble.
Yeah. But no, I won't be here next week. And it's not because I'm unfit to podcast. It's the family and I are going away. We're going to go up and visit the in-laws for a bit. You know, our bubble's small. Their bubble is non-existent. So,
yeah.
I think it's important.
Take advantage,
The one thing that is going to be real fun is the ferries, because we couldn't get a reservation to get up there. So the plan is to head up on a Friday and hopefully get on a boat sometime that day.
I mean, I don't want to scare you, but you're going to the Sunshine Coast, right?
Yeah.
When I went the Canada Day weekend, and we didn't make it on as foot passengers on the way back, so.
We have a reservation on the way back.
Okay.
We did get a reservation on the way back. That's not a problem. It's the way up, and is sort of what it is.
Yeah, make sure you have those Paw Patrol episodes lined up on Baby Force's iPad.
I got them on her tablet. I got them on my tablet in case her tablet. Yeah, trust me. You know, parenting advice 101, I'm starting to learn the lessons the hard way, but I don't continue to have to be taught them.
Yeah.
But thanks for everyone for tuning into this episode. As always, you can find us on CanucksHockeyBlog.com or just go to C4Podcast.com. That just shoots you right over to our podcast episode listings. We can find us on pretty much every single podcast application out there. And if you've made it to this point, do us a favor. Leave us a review wherever it is that you listen to our podcast, or go to podchaser.com/C4Podcast. The reason why leaving a review is so important is it helps us be recognized by others, and in turn it's probably the best way that you can support this podcast, sharing it with friends and family. As is our practice, you give us a review, good review, bad review, we read it verbatim.
Five stars, it sucks.
Yeah, or one out of five stars, and is awesome. I mean, that's perfectly fine. I want to point out, you and I were sort of chatting about this. We've had some bad reviews. We've actually read bad reviews. Don't think that we won't.
Yeah, I was going to say,
if you drop a bad review, have fun with it. Not to scare you off, but you'll get the time to shine, your 5 minutes of fame. You'll have to tune into the episode again because you'll want to obviously hear us read it.
Yeah, it's one of the best ways to get your voice on the show because we will read out the review. So,
yeah. And then, as I mentioned already, get into our Discord. Discord.io/C4podcast is the easiest way to get in on the action. But we are also on Twitter and Facebook at the C4 podcast. So on behalf of Anna at A4Site03, myself, Chris at Lightforce, the currently unfit to podcast Matt Lee at Matt Lee_61, and the didn't make it inside the bubble on the LTIR, Adam O'Neill Carter at Adam FOC, I'm going to sign off this episode with those magical two words. We out.